It's time for From the Short Grass with Trey Schaap, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Short Grass is brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. Blackman Auctions. For over 80 years, better auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Short Grass, here is your host, Trey Schaap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Schaap. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Maybe you even spent some time on the golf course. Might have been a little chilly, but you were able to get out and play. Well, one thing that is not going to happen, and that's the TGL Golf League that Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy were putting together. In fact, it will happen. It's just going to be put on hold for a year. Bad weather damaged the facility that they were going to use in South Florida. Coming up on this edition of From the Short Grass, I traveled to Jacksonville, Florida, and sat down with Seth Fader. And you might say, who? Well, he's a guy that is behind the lens, if you will, or behind the computer screen. Seth Fader is known for his videos that he produces, his writing in those videos, and what he puts together, the content creator that he is. You're going to enjoy this interview. And you've probably seen some of his work if you're a diehard golfer like myself. Since 1938, better auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. Find them on the web, blackmanauctions.com. We're back after the break with Seth Fader. Stay with us.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels on the web at bphotels.com.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
I'm Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. I've heard it said that sometimes there are two best days with real estate ownership. It's the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Depending on where you are in your journey, let me help. If you're looking for that outdoor getaway or that home in the city, I can help. If you're looking at selling that outdoor property you haven't seen in 3 years, I can help. Or selling that home in the city that you've outgrown, I can help. Blackman Auctions is your one-stop real estate company. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Schaap. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group. They know how to manage hotel properties. When you need an overnight place to stay, log on to their website, bphotels.com, find one of their properties, and book it. You'll be glad you did. If you're a diehard golfer like myself and like watching videos on the game of golf, specifically during Masters Week, you can't get enough coverage of Masters Week, right? Seth Fader is one of those content creators that helps produce the videos for Augusta National Golf Club in the Masters Tournament. I was able to travel to Jacksonville, Florida, and sit down with Seth for this episode of the podcast. On the tee, Seth Fader.
Seth, thanks for joining me on From the Short Grass. Very interesting story. I mean, we've been talking before we started recording this episode of From the Short Grass, but first I want to ask you about when you first picked up a golf club. Do you remember when you fell in love with the game?
Yeah, well, those are, thank you. Thanks for having me. Those are probably two different answers, because I was a kid growing up in New England, mm-hmm. and not around golf. Nobody I knew played golf. I liked golf. I remember loving Greg Norman, obviously Jack. This is all pre-Tiger. So I love the sport. You know, one of the things I remember thinking about when I was a kid growing up in Boston was the West Coast swing. So it's dark at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's freezing cold, and here they are in Pebble Beach in Riviera,
sunny California, playing golf.
Torrey Pines, right? It's like, what? This is incredible. I used to get the same way in the winter with West Coast football games too.
Okay,
it's like, oh my gosh, why am I living here in Massachusetts? But I didn't really pick up a club. I had a couple of times where we had a driving range, you know, in our town, and we would go there. And I mean, I knew nothing about it. And then I played a couple par three courses, executive courses, and that was fun. But honestly, I went to college at University of Miami in Coral Gables, Florida.
You had to escape the cold somehow, right?
Yeah. Well, once I went there, man, I took a trip there. My senior high school was in February.
That's where I'm going.
And I walked right around campus. I'm like, Dad, this is where we're going. And once I got to Florida, that was it. But I remember then starting to play, and, you know, it wasn't even – I loved being outside. I loved the golf course, but it was that first great shot, you know, because I didn't hit a lot of them. But when I did, I was hooked, and I wasn't very good. But it seemingly every year I got a little bit better and fell in love with the game even more.
And you play a lot now?
Yeah, I play now as much as I can. I work for myself now, so I have a lot more free time, which is nice. But, yeah, I play as much as I can.
Did you think when you were at the University of Miami and playing the game that it would ever become part of your profession where you're not a professional golfer, but the professional golf is solely part of your profession?
Yeah, there's a million things. Yes, no. The answer is no. There's a million things I've done in my career that if you had told me when I was a kid, let alone when I was in college, that I did, that I would have been like, there's no way. There's no way. Like, it wouldn't have crossed my mind. I mean, Greg Norman is a perfect example. Like, I revered him. There was something so cool about his hair and the teeth and the nickname and the way he played. Like, I was just inspired, right?
And that hat?
The hat, yes. All of it, right? It was so – everything that I didn't know. And to do specials on him, to interview him for hours at a time, to be in his presence, and then – subsequently Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods and, you know, all the greats of sort of the last 25, 30 years. So, yeah, there's no way I would have thought that, especially with me picking up the game so late in my life and being so bad at it. But I think what I've always been good at is knowing stories and knowing what make good stories. And then I didn't realize until I got into the business that I could tell those stories, and that's sort of where it all came together.
And you say get into the business. You worked for PGA Tour Productions,
yep.
Correct?
Yeah.
For how many years?
20 and a half years, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was a broadcast journalism major at the University of Miami, you know, studying, making TV. I wanted to just be a sports guy.
Right.
Almost everybody goes into it, wants to be on air.
Of course they do.
And then I realized I didn't either have – I sweat too much, so I wasn't going to be on air. I was too sweaty. I was pretty – it was decent at it. I had a Boston accent that my teachers made me lose, which was kind of fun. But then I really loved...
How'd they get that out of you?
Yeah, there was all these like sort of oral...
You can't park the car.
Yeah, no. Funny, interesting enough, if I try to do it now,
it
sounds like it's over the top. Like, you know, like sort of like what you just did, but it's like... And then I feel weird because my dad still lives there and his wife, and it's, you know, they sound like that.
Yeah, mine was over the top.
But it was very like, okay, almost like a singer kind of warming up. Like there's some drills that you do, and it, you know, and again, time, certainly.
Sure.
I mean, I used to have one voice when I was down in Miami, and then when I go home, it'd kick back in.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wanted to be on air. And then I started doing some of that stuff in college, and it was really fun. But what I loved was the art of sort of these features and these long form stories. And again, I didn't know I'd ever have that opportunity, but I fell in love with it. And then my first job out of college was at CNN Sports Illustrated in Atlanta. Got lucky, had a friend who had a friend. I got a call on a Friday. They gave me a quiz on the phone about sports. And it said, do you want to intern here? I said, yeah. They're like, Wayne, can you be here? I'm like, I guess I can be there on Monday. And so
right.
I drove down to Atlanta from Boston. And my first job was at CNNSI, and that was literally learned the business in, you know, 4.5 years, and did everything from making graphics for scoreboards to ripping scripts back in those days to cutting features. And then eventually, my last year there, I was doing a golf show. It was 2001, so Tiger Mania.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a live golf show on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on CNN, so on the network, not just CNNSI. with the late Jim Huber, who was this legendary broadcaster.
Yes.
And I produced him for a half hour, and it made me really fall in love with the game, and obviously Tiger, and then to the tour.
When you first sat down with Tiger Woods for an interview, working on a story, whatever project, what was that like?
Yeah, intimidating, number one. I mean, I was scared. At that point, I had done Super Bowls at CNN. I had done other live sports. I'd interviewed, you know, many people. But I was, pretty intimidated. But I do remember I wanted to treat him as like a normal human being. If you look from a distance, especially in those early Tiger Mania days, I mean, people were genuflecting around him. People were in awe. I mean, crying. Like, it was insane the amount of stuff that was happening around him. And so I wanted to be the antithesis of that, right? Mm-hmm. I wanted to say, hey, man, what's going on? Shake his hand. Tell him a joke. I had heard that he's sort of a guy's guy and, you know, irreverent at times, all this sort of stuff. So I just wanted to be like that. So over the years, getting to know him, yes, I was scared the first time. We went back and forth a little bit, had some fun. We challenged each other to, I think it might have been the first interview I ever did with him, challenged each other to a chicken wing eating contest.
Are you serious?
No, that's the truth. He didn't believe because I said something like, so what are your goals? We were at Bay Hill, which was, you know, a couple hours down the road.
Perfect.
Right? And he, you know, place where he's so comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
His dad was sick, and I remember him being a little bit emotional, but not like he hadn't passed or anything like that. And he said, I go, you know, so what are the goals? You've been out for a few weeks. He's like, oh, I'm going to win. I'm like, that's not an answer. Like, give me an answer. Like, what, you know, what are your goals? He goes, no, I'm going to win. He goes, I don't care what it is. I'm going to beat you. He goes, if you challenge me to something, I beat you. And I said, okay, I bet you I could beat you eating food. He goes, yeah, let's go. I mean, so we ended up talking about wings and all this stuff. So that was like sort of, and then that for the rest of my career at the tour. In fact,
wait, you have to give us the answer there. Who won?
Well, we didn't end up having it was more talk. We didn't end up having the actual, I know.
Maybe we need to set that up.
That would be fine. I think I could still take, although now I'm 50. I don't know if I could eat as much.
You still got his number?
I do.
You could get in contact with him and say, hey, remember, we need to do that chicken wing eating contest.
He would remember that story because, again, it was so, at that time, so different than anyone, the way people were treating him. And it really worked in my favor. I mean, sadly, I mean, if we go forward 18, 19 years, I was with him for about 3 hours the day before his car accident.
Oh, wow.
So we do a bunch of stuff at that point at the tour for the Tiger Woods Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
We're at Riviera. I mean, 3 hours, you know, between interviews. And
he seemed fine.
Completely fine. I mean, I was actually flying back. And when I landed, I had, because he was doing something for another client of ours that day. He was on the way there. And I just was like stunned. I would just have no idea. It was unreal.
Do you think he realizes how close he was to not being here anymore?
Well, I'd like to think he does. I don't know. Again, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm personal friends with him, certainly.
Sure.
But I would like to think he does. I mean, from my, I had some interactions with him since then, and he seems to. I could go hours into Tiger because of the psychology of it. And the fact that he didn't really have a real childhood, the fact that he was famous from, you know, basically 2 years old, the fact that he didn't.
Yeah, when he was on the Mike Douglas show.
Exactly. 2 years old, next to Bob Hope, on the Michael Douglas show, making a putt with his dad. Like, I mean, you know, how do you have a real childhood after that? And then, much like child actors or actresses, for him to then have the career, if not surpass what everyone expected,
mm-hmm.
I mean, just the... The psychology, I mean, again, it, as a storyteller, that's what I think of. I think of almost the disadvantages he had in real life. So to me, when stuff happened after that, I'm not surprised because I just don't know if he was ever taught any of that kind of stuff.
When you were at the PGA Tour, it traveled all over, got to see amazing golf courses, amazing golfers.
Mm.
What were some of the projects that you worked on for PGA Tour?
Like you said, 20 years. Into long-form programming, so, you know, documentary shows, documentaries, hour specials for CBS, NBC, ESPN, Travel Channel, yada, yada, yada. Actually handled internet, created or helped create our international content team at one point for 3 years. So really got to see the world. I'd say some of my top pieces, stories, trips, Vijay Singh, who lives here in Ponte Vedra, he had just become number one, so it would have been 2008, 2007, somewhere in there, 2006.
To go to Fiji?
We went to Fiji, and he had not been back since he left. And in fact, and I didn't know this until we chatted even more, he was kind of nervous to go back. He didn't know how the reception, because he had left and then sort of left to start his own career and really adopted the U.S. and lived here and became very famous. So he was very nervous. And I always tell this story. He's there to promote a golf course he's doing. But again, it's also, we're doing this big piece on his life. And so we're interviewing. We went to the shanty town where he grew up and saw kids playing golf in bare feet and trash being burnt next to the fairway. Like, it's insane. I mean, what he had to, this is the second golf course he grew up on, he had to crawl under the international airport. There was a drainage pipe. Instead of walk around the 5 miles to get to the golf course, because his house was on one side of the airport, the runway.
Yeah.
And the golf course is on the other. And instead of walking all the way around, he would crawl underneath the drainage pipe to get to the golf course. Save him an hour.
Yeah.
And so being there and hearing him, and then we're walking down this hill at this golf course, and he's showing us, and all of a sudden, all these native Fijians in their best, attire come out of the woods. Vijay, Vijay! And the smile and relief on his face, I'll never forget it. Like, it was like a new person. And, he could be gruff, and he wasn't great with the media. Like, there was some contention there. But, man, I saw the kid from Fiji at that moment. So that was a monumental one. I mean, I was with Sergio Garcia back in Spain right after he won the Masters and at his home course. That was that was pretty spectacular. I mean, yeah, there's some good ones over the years for sure.
Seth, you get to shoot videos or produce videos for Masters, and what people see on masters.org outside of the broadcast that CBS does. What's that like, being at the hallowed grounds of Augusta National year after year after year?
All right, so we'll play a little game here. So close your eyes, right? I'm going to close my eyes.
Okay.
So you've been there, but close your eyes. So for people at home that have never been there, what do they think of it, right? They think of the hallowed grounds, and you think of, Jim Nantz, Hello Friends, and, all these incredible moments, and the smell of the azaleas, and, the hills. I don't think people really realize how hilly it is. Well, I had all those, right? But then I got to go there and be inside that. I was inside sort of the gates of Disney World, if you will, behind the scenes, right? And it's as amazing every time I went as it was the very first time I went. So, I got to be a part of history in a way that was intimate and even more than I could ever imagine. So, that was, I always say my favorite. Some people ask me, what's my favorite piece? What's my favorite moment? So my favorite moment was the very first year that we did. So this is working for the PGA Tour for Augusta National in the Masters Tournament. We're producing all their video. And they have time with the big three, Arnie, Jack, and Gary.
Wow.
And so in my head, I'm like, okay, what can we do with those big three to really, tell their story? And we don't have a lot of time, but we've got them. And Jimmy Roberts from NBC Sports is the host. So we're going to do a little conversation, but I need something visually to sort of get into it. Flashback to 2007, I'm working at the PGA Tour, and I'm doing a documentary on Gary Player. And it's going to be his life. It's called Good Guys Wear Black. And it's based around sort of the hook is his 50th Masters. So 2007 was his 50th Masters. So we're there. We're capturing sort of all his moments. We're doing interviews. He comes back to me. He says, hey, this is Sunday before the Masters. He says, hey, every Monday morning, I get out of my car. They drop me off at the front entrance. I say hello, and then I walk down Magnolia Lane. He goes, would you be interested in filming that?
Heck yeah.
yes, please. Yeah. So sure enough, we 7 a.m. the next morning, we're inside the gate. They don't want us there, but we're like, hey, but Gary Player told us to come. And so sure enough, he shows up, and the sun is just coming up. It's wet. It's cold. It's dewy. And he just starts walking down, and he starts telling stories. He's a talker.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole way down, he's just telling incredible stories. And we have this incredible shot of him just walking by himself towards the clubhouse. And so I remembered that. So my idea to back with the big three was to take the big three and walk down Magnolia Lane. And so here I am, our very first big shoot with Augusta National for the PGA Tour. And I've got Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player and Arnold Palmer in their golf carts, and they're chatting, and they're all, and there's 100 people around, and I'm trying to get that clean shot. I'm like hiding people in the bushes, like
get behind this tree over here.
I'm doing everything I can, and we do not have a lot of time. And I'm sweating. I'm in a suit. I'm sweating, and Arnie is just talking to Jack, and they're talking, and I go, Arnie, all right, Mr. Palmer. I'm like, we gotta go. He's like, whoa, like. I gathered the big three up, and they walked down Magnolia Lane, it's like the seas parted. There wasn't a single person in the shot. There were 200 people around, but we had cleared everybody out, and they walk away, and we have two, you know, HD cameras capturing that, and then that was sort of our lead into the story. So that's always, yeah, that's the ultimate.
For people that have seen the drone footage through the clubhouse of Augusta National, you got that idea from seeing it somewhere else?
Yeah, so... at the PGA Tour, and I'm not going to take full credit for any of that. I mean, there was obviously a huge team of producers and all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, they were at the PGA Tour. We had seen a video at a bowling alley, and this guy's flying, like, as the ball's going down the lane and then through the pins and then back around. I mean, just an insanely creative and stunning drone shot inside a building, which I don't think anyone had really done.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like he's like a... a racing drone, you know, you've seen those races, right?
Yeah.
So the concept was, what can they do? What could he do in golf? And the first concept was at the Tour Championship in Atlanta, and basically organizing it so that it times out that as you fly through the open door, you see Bobby Jones, and then up the stairs, and then there's someone I think it was Rory doing an interview. With one of our producers, and then out the window to the 18th green, and then somebody makes a putt. I mean, that kind of stuff. It was really, I think, and I could be wrong, but I think it was really the first time the sports world kind of used that. Mm-hmm. Now everybody does it.
Everybody does.
And then the same thing, they basically just recreated at Augusta. And sort of the nuts and bolts behind that is you just, everything has to sort of get pre-approved there. And that's what I will say, my favorite thing I love about going there every year and having gone there every year, is the sort of back and forth with the committees and the teams at Augusta National. And, you know, they know what they want. You give them a great idea, and they're all on board. And so it's a great atmosphere. It's a great atmosphere in so many ways.
So what do you have up your sleeve that you can tell us for 2024?
Well, we'll see. I haven't been invited yet back for 2024, so we'll have to see. You know, it's definitely, especially now, because, again, the PGA Tour has their business with Augusta National. But who knows? You know, we're definitely working on a lot of things for them and for other clients, certainly. And, you know, my goal as an independent, you know, sort of production team is to come up with a concept, sell that concept to somebody, and then give them that. You know, I like to think of us, so Jumbo Media is the name of the company.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think of us as sort of like a boutique production company, but with that ability to do the high end. You're going to get the Masters type film on our scale. And so it's, you know, hopefully people like it.
Where can people find your work?
Yeah, so Jumbo Media Inc. .com is our website. You can see our past works, a little bit of our history, hopefully our future work. But I mean, we do tons of stuff for Golf Channel still. We're doing a story right now on this guy named Dean Knuth, who we found, it's going to air for Veterans Day, but we found him. He was the historian at San Diego Golf and Country Club. And we were doing a piece on Joe Louis, the boxer, who basically broke the color barrier at the San Diego Open in 1952.
Wow.
And we're doing a piece for Golf Channel on that. And it was at San Diego Country Club. Dean was the historian, so I call him to get an interview. And while I'm prepping, I start to read about Dean Knuth's story. And his story is fascinating. He was in the Navy on a destroyer, and he was a math genius. So he had invented ways to track Soviet submarines using these calculations and formulas. And some of the things back in, this is in the Cold War, in Vietnam in the Cold War, and some of the things he does or did still classified today, it's still in use. But he's also a huge golfer. And so as part of his like Navy graduate school, which is in Monterey, just near Pebble Beach, part of his like master's or thesis, whatever it was he needed to use those formulas. And sure enough, he's like, well, can I do it on golf? And they're like, yeah. So he actually is the first guy to come up with slope rating, course slope ratings, handicapping. And literally, I mean, his nickname is called the Pope of Slope. So here's this genius naval graduate, Naval Academy graduate, post-Navy graduate, who used his genius to create the handicap systems and course slope rating system that we all use on a daily basis. So we're doing that story for Veterans Day for Golf Channel. So really very interesting things.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
Best golf course you've ever played or best golf course you've ever created a video from?
Well, I mean, okay. That's amazing. Well, I mean, Augusta and Pebble, I mean, to me are the two, if I'm going to create a video, those are the two I want to, you know, so different, so unique in their own right.
That's your canvas.
But, I mean, every shot's great, right? I mean, especially if the weather's good at Pebble, it's second and
none. The waves are crashing up on 18.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, I love going up, like, down on 7 and then back up 8, and then you're at the cliff on your second shot at 8. I mean, there's something, dare I say, spiritual. But then at the same, in the same breath, you know, the minute you get on the grounds at Augusta National, it feels that way. There's not an ocean with, you know,
it's different.
3 though. Hours away, yeah. But man,
it's different.
It's so different in the way, the reverence with which they treat the golf course there. Like, so those are my two favorite golf courses. My favorite golf course I ever played, though, is Cypress Point. So I was lucky enough, after 20 years as a tour, I knew I was leaving, and I basically took a month off between leaving the tour and starting my own company. And I called in every favor. I knew I was going out to Northern California. And I did the kind of guys trip with a couple buddies. And we played Cypress, Spanish Bay, Pebble Beach, Tehama, Paso Tiempo, kind of right in a row.
Wow.
And it was, I mean, Cypress Point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Pebble, just nobody's on it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the history. I mean, the Walker Cup's coming back there next year, I think.
Yeah.
Just insane. Yeah, so that would be my favorite.
All right, Seth, fantasy foursome, living or deceased, three other golfers that you could play a round of golf with, who would they be?
Do they have to be professional golfers?
No.
Oh, okay, well, anybody. I mean, Tiger, 100%.
He's professional.
No, oh, he's very professional, yes. But for sure, I mean, I used to tell people all this. I mean, I owe my professional career to him, and I told him this, and he knows this, and I think I'm not the only one to tell him that. I mean, just what he did for the game, what he did for my life, I mean, help build my house, you know, help put my kids, two of my three kids in college right now. Like, so very impactful for me. I would like to play Jack. I would like Jack in there. He's another one that's been really great to me in my career, getting to know him, you know, followed him around for a year while he was redoing Muirfield Village one last time, as he said he was taking the last bite of the apple. So that was pretty powerful. And I like their relationship, so I think that'd be fun. And then I would have to put Tom Brady as a New Englander.
Wow, yeah.
As a native New Englander, know he's a good golfer, but just, I mean, to be with three of the greatest athletes in the history of all sports and to just sort of listen to what made them great and how they performed. But also, I think they'd be fun. While, yes, I would probably be very nervous and I would probably play awful, I would really enjoy those.
That'd
three.
Be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be my, those are my three.
Seth, thanks so much.
My pleasure, man. Thanks
for having
me.
Appreciate
it. Yeah. Thank you.
Traveling to Fayetteville to watch a game? Forgot to book a room for the night? Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group has you covered. Stay where the fans stay. Staybridge Suites is just south of Baum Walker Stadium and is an all-suite hotel within walking distance of Baum Walker, Bud Walton, and Razorback Stadium. Or you could stay at the Comfort Inn and Suites with newly remodeled rooms throughout the entire property. Find them on the web at bphotels.com. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels.
I'm Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. I've heard it said that sometimes there are two best days with real estate ownership. It's the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Depending on where you are in your journey, let me help. If you're looking for that outdoor getaway or that home in the city, I can help. If you're looking at selling that outdoor property you haven't seen in 3 years, I can help. Or selling that home in the city that you've outgrown, I can help. Blackman Auctions is your one-stop real estate company. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
We are out of time. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more. And I hope to see you sometime soon from the Shortgrass.
You've been listening to From the Shortgrass, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network.